Blog Talk Radio.
Of a much less detailed a podcast. Thursday night, April 10th, 2014. I'm Dre. He's Jay. We're back from Chicago. We had our little mini vacation trip up to Chicago this past weekend, 3-4 days up there. Had WrestleMania go on during that time. Jason got back to his town in time to see WrestleMania. He'll be our man on the scene at the WrestleMania party, the official non-wrestling fan review of WrestleMania, which should be interesting. But before we do that, I have to do a little gloating, because when I do something great, it's worldwide news. As we all know, I love to gloat, and I've got a little gloating to do. Last show we had a WrestleMania preview, and we had it with our friend Jerry, the pro wrestling expert. I want to thank him once again for a great show that we had with him. But during that show, one of us three threw out a crazy theory about why Brock Lesnar might actually beat The Undertaker at WrestleMania and end the undefeated streak. And as Arn Anderson used to say, I don't want to toot my own horn, but toot, toot. The streak is over. The streak is dead and buried, just like The Undertaker and his gimmick. And Jason, I don't know exactly what I saw to make me pick that, but I am the one who picked that. So even though it's a fake sport with predetermined outcomes, I still have to say I believe I had that one.
Well, I have to say it sounded better than it ended up looking, because it was a pretty horrible match. And these guys are talented. I mean, what they do, it's not easy to do what they do. And you can see the physical toll that it takes on these guys. And, they put their bodies on the line. Most of them die young, way too young. So they're performers, but there wasn't a whole lot of good wrestling, and not that I'm the best judge of it, but I know it when I see it. it was a pretty awful match. It was slow. It was plotting. It really just came down to who could throw up a shoulder on the other guy's finishing move enough times before finally there would be a three count. And it just was back and forth, pretty much just finishing moves. There wasn't really a whole lot of wrestling going on. Not that I expected a whole lot, given these two guys and the Undertaker's getting up there. Was he 50?
Oh, he is going to be 50 next year, I believe I read.
Okay, it needed to end. I think it would have been probably just better off overall if he just would have retired with the streak perfect. But I'm assuming they sold him on this and threw some money at him. And even the ovation he got when the match was over nothing really felt impressive. I think it was more of a harbinger when that happened, that you knew that Daniel Bryan would end up winning the overall, because I don't think they were going to let those fans down twice. There probably would have been riots if you would have had Orton or Batista win the whole thing. And just overall, the whole night in general was just underwhelming from a wrestling standpoint. It was a lot more setup that didn't really pay off. I don't know what it was like being there, but just watching it, I was watching it with wrestling fans who knew a lot more about the stuff than I do, and even they seemed a bit unimpressed. So that was my overall take of the whole night. But, yeah, kudos to you for calling the end of a scripted event.
Yes, I'm very proud of that. There's money. There's real money being bet on this shit, too. So I could have made some money if I had had the foresight to bet on this scripted event. But that's one thing I never got around to doing in my worst throes of depression or despair in my gambling habit. I never did bet on professional wrestling, which, you know, I might as well have. I bet on everything else and lost. I don't know why I didn't take that step. But I have to take your word for how bad it was, because I didn't see any of WrestleMania. I knew I wasn't going to see any of it. I'd be on a bus from Chicago back home here to beautiful suburban Memphis, Tennessee. So I knew I wouldn't be able to see it. So you're the man on the scene for the WrestleMania party. You can tell me what the other wrestling fans thought of the event, how they reacted. Were they as unimpressed or underwhelmed or disappointed by the Undertaker match and the card overall as you were?
Yeah, I have to say that just general indifference was the overall mood in the room. The one thing that we were impressed by was the streaming quality of the WWE Network. That entire show, given the amount of people that were watching it, and everything pretty much went off without a hitch. There were no drops in the broadcast. There was no lag. The picture quality was all very good. So I actually have to say, on a technical side, I was very impressed. And of course, they put on a good show. I mean, you can see they have a lot of money and they don't mind spending it. You know, they do all the pyro. I believe it was, I don't know if this has happened before, but it happened a couple of times during the night, but the first guy who did it was, I'm trying to remember the name, was it Bray Wyatt? Is that right?
Yeah.
Actually came out to live introduction music. Like, the band that sings his intro song was there singing him in, which was actually a really nice little touch. I actually liked that quite a bit. And then when they did it for Ortman at the end, it was like, I've seen this already. It's like, that's not cool anymore. So you didn't need to do it again, because I thought it was really cool the first time. Second time, I was just like, no big deal. I was very disappointed after watching Raw the Monday before. I was actually excited because I'd never actually seen this Daniel Bryan wrestle. And I didn't really get to see him wrestle. I got to see him get the shit beat out of him for two matches and then just finally score a winning blow. I didn't actually see anything technical that's like, wow, this guy is, you know, he deserves to be the champ. I think it was more just fan service that they gave it to him so he could get out there and do his yes, yes, yes and stand on the ropes. And it was more drama and scripting than it was this guy went out there and just out-wrestled everybody and earned it. So that was a little disappointing, because you and Jerry had kind of talked him up on our last show, you know, explaining his angle to me. So I had some expectations that I was going to see some really good wrestling, and nothing the whole night was good from an actual wrestling standpoint.
That's sad to hear. Yeah, he has two matches on the show. One is against, you know, a future Hall of Famer in Triple H, and the other is against two guys who have been around for many years now, a decade each, and they should be able to have a pretty good match with him in Randy Orton and Batista. But, yeah, if he was just selling all night and just selling and selling and selling and getting beat up and getting beat up some more, then finding a way to score a win late, like you said, with just one strike or, you know, one knee or whatever it was. Yeah, that's not really selling him. That might be selling the product as far as the excitement and the build-up to the victory, that he's the underdog fighting back from under all night. And when he finally breaks through and gets the victory and wins the title, yeah, I guess that's a wonderful explosion and a great climax and all of that. But yeah, I would rather have seen him actually show his skill and show the stuff that he used to be able to do and the things that I'm sure he can still do, the things that I saw him do, you know, in Chicago Heights in front of 400 people for Ring of Honor. that turned me on to him in the first place when no one knew who he was, when he was American Dragon, Bryan Danielson. But that's the thing about WWE, man. They take these talented guys like CM Punk and Daniel Bryan, and they get them in these programs and in these feuds where they have to wrestle sort of this WWE style, which I have to be honest, I know of the style and I know of the name of it. I'm still not completely sure what it means. I think in general it sort of means less sort of high spots maneuvers, less things physically that will pop the crowd and make them go, oh, shit, that was a hell of a move. I've never seen that before. And more moves where your face is to the camera, where you can, you know, present yourself as a superstar and an actor while still doing your wrestling moves. You know, think of The Rock and the People's Elbow where he's staring into the camera, John Cena and You Can't See Me where he's looking up at the camera, things like that where you keep your eyes on the camera and your body turned to the camera so that everybody can see you. I think that's more what the WWE style is supposed to be. So it's kind of hard to do that when you have a repertoire that makes you turn your body in different ways and do different things like Daniel Bryan can, like CM Punk can. So that's the thing that's really disappointing. When you get a guy that has the physical talent to really put on a great wrestling match, when you get him into WWE, the emphasis becomes more on putting on a great television show, and that's certainly at the detriment of the wrestling.
And not being there live, you know, of course, watching it on TV, especially during that last match, during that three-way match, I got the feeling that it was framed as such that it was more enjoyable on TV than it would have been if you were there live, because what was happening was either Batista, Orton, or both would beat up Daniel Bryan, and he would just be left laying in a pile outside of the ring. Then they'd go back to those two fighting, and then something would be about to happen, and then all of a sudden, like literally off screen, Daniel Bryan would just fly in and hit one of those guys. Now, of course, if you're live, you're seeing this all set up.
Right.
You know, you're seeing the guy basically just probably standing around waiting to jump into the ring. But on TV, it's more of like a surprise, you know. It's almost like you're watching like a scary movie and somebody just jumped out of the closet, you know, and something happened. And it really seemed like it was being, you know, like very close angles, everything all framed up just so this guy could suddenly just pop in from out of the frame. And then all of a sudden the crowd's all cheering because he showed up, like almost magical. But I would imagine if you were there live watching it, you're seeing all of this develop. And, of course, they're trying to get your attention. It is like magic because they're trying to get your attention focused on one thing, which is the two guys fighting, so you're not paying attention to the guy lurking in the background, jump in there and knee somebody in the face or kick them in the face. The only real kind of like, you know, kind of like, oh, shit moment that I had was when they threw Bryan through one of the announcer tables. I believe the technical term was because you had at one point Batista and Orton decided to like team up. They were like, you know, like fuck this guy. We're not going to let him win the title. So let's get rid of him. So So they set it up they're on the table and, you know, Batista throws him into the Batista bomb into the Randy Orton move. It was the RKO.
Very good, yeah.
So that's the move. It's like, okay, wow, that's cool. And Daniel Bryan goes through the table, and they go through this whole thing with they bring out the stretcher, and of course he stops the stretcher halfway up, and that's when he comes in and does a few moves and finally gets the win. But when you actually watched it on the replay a few times, you could totally tell that Randy Orton was the one who came out worse for wear, because they took all this time to clear off the table and get rid of all their monitors on this table, but they must have missed one because when Orton made his move, he went through the table and came down completely square on his back on a TV monitor.
Ow.
And that was one of those where you could tell it wasn't fake pain. You know, you can tell the guy rolling around holding his face and the guy laying there in real pain. And he got up in a couple of, maybe 30 seconds later, you could see he had cuts on his back and his back was bleeding. They don't usually create these moves so the guys start bleeding out of their pants. And so they're wheeling Bryan out, and Batista and Orton go back to fighting a little bit. And Batista puts one more move on Orton where he throws him on his back pretty hard, and you can just see the grimace and the pain. And it was, you know, you can see Randy Orton is saying stuff to Batista like,
I'm really fucked up.
So like, yeah, give me a minute. But so that was really like kind of like the only, oh my God moment. And it wasn't because of what they did to Daniel Bryan, which was supposed to put him in a stretcher and a neck brace. It was because you saw the guy who really got hurt unintentionally.
That was supposed to be Daniel Bryan's, oh my God, they're dead moment. You know, where they get the stretcher out and you wonder if he's going to live. And Orton's the one that fucked himself up the most, huh? That is funny. That happened. There's a reason they take those monitors out before they do their moves. It's because they don't actually want to get hurt. Now, I'm not a fan of that because it suspends the disbelief. If you want to fuck your opponent up that bad to put him through a table, leave the monitors in there. Really fuck him up. When you say he's trying to end his career while you're watching the guy delicately take these monitors out so that he doesn't actually end his career, to me, that suspends the disbelief completely. I'm not advocating at all to put him through a table with the monitors in there and fuck him up for real. I'm just saying skip the table spot. Just do something else. I've never liked
that. If you're gonna hit a guy in the face with a sledgehammer, as we saw at one point during the final match when Triple H and Stephanie McMahon interfered in the match, which really was much another more fan service because Daniel Bryan scares them both off. But Triple H goes and pulls out a sledgehammer, and then it gets reversed on him. But if you're going to hit a guy in the face with a sledgehammer, don't put your hand in front of the sledgehammer. Not the person who's waiting to get hit, but the guy who's doing the hitting. Don't cap the sledgehammer with your hand if you're going to hit somebody in the face with a sledgehammer. Little pro tip right there.
I'm going to get so violent that I'm going to break out a sledgehammer on this guy and really fuck his head up. But let me put my hand over the sledgehammer so that he doesn't get hit too hard with the metal here. I don't want to do that to him. I mean, come on.
We wouldn't want him getting hurt and all.
Yeah. Seriously. Okay. So that was the non-wrestling fans official WrestleMania review there. That was another great point brought up by the non-wrestling fan earlier, which I can't remember at this moment. I should have wrote it down when you said it, but it was a very good point. I'll go back and listen and figure it out later. Now, Ultimate Warrior had his Hall of Fame speech the night before, which I hope you didn't watch because I didn't. Even I didn't want to watch any part of the Hall of Fame speeches because I have no use for any of that. Comes out during WrestleMania, got his little standing ovation out there, came out on Raw the next night, did a crazy speech that sounded weird. I guess sort of gave his own eulogy almost before he flew back to Arizona and left the hotel room with his wife the next day, Tuesday, this past Tuesday. And dropped dead in the hallway of a massive heart attack. I don't know if you have anything at all to add about that, about Ultimate Warrior. Really, the only thing I would say about it is go to Deadspin.com and find the story written about Ultimate Warrior. I think it's called Ultimate Warrior Was a Massive Dick or something like that. And just read some of the quotes that this guy put out there after his wrestling career was over. He basically turned into a lunatic nut job, just ranting about any and everything from Heath Ledger's death to, you know, gay people and gay rights. And some of the stuff that he had to say was downright disgusting. And to have a massive heart attack right after you get honored by the WWE and their Hall of Fame ceremony, all I can say is it couldn't have happened to a nicer guy. And WWE is awful lucky that it didn't happen right there live on their television the night before, because think about how close they were to death. As much as they try to run away from death in that industry, think about how close they were to having a man, a steroid freak, one of the biggest steroid freaks of the 90s, how close they were to having that guy drop dead on live television on their network. It would have been just the most unbelievable PR hit, and they were this close to having it happen, and they should consider themselves lucky. But in a weird way, because Ultimate Warrior was such a tool, I kind of wish it would have happened.
Yeah, I know, and I don't know anything at all about these guys and their personal lives, and a lot of them do expire early. You know, there's so much. I mean, they talk about, you know, football and baseball and all that stuff with concussions, and there's probably no measurement for what these guys put themselves through with allegedly drugs, or that's actually been documented. So I don't even have to say allegedly with the steroids. And just the brain trauma, the body trauma, you know, that kind of stuff, that changes people. I'm not making an excuse for his behavior, but it really does mess up with people. And it seems like that lifestyle, you don't have a long time in a lot of cases. Especially, you know, these guys, they go young, and sometimes they go violently, unfortunately. But everybody wants their 15 minutes. It's, you know, and people will do anything for it. And we see that across real sports, fake sports. You know, it's kind of sad, but that is the price they pay for the fame.
Yeah. And the pro wrestling, of course, has so many young deaths on their ledger, and their people in their 30s and their 40s. So look physically to be in the best shape you could be in, just the picture of health, what you would think that healthy person looks like, when in reality they're so massive and so jacked up that they're putting stress on their heart and their organs, and, you know, not to mention the painkillers they take to recover from the beating they put their bodies through. Yeah, it's I definitely don't wish that on every wrestler. I definitely have respect for what they do to themselves in the name of entertaining the people like me that wanted to get in the ring and be one of those type of guys when I was a kid, but never had the guts to try. But no matter what you do for entertaining me, if you turn out to be a massive tool, then yeah, I'm going to kind of smile when you drop dead in the hallway of a heart attack. That's still funny to me. I don't care what anyone thinks.
And I'm not sure if it's still true to this day. But I mean, I do remember the conversation in the past, just a little bit of a tangent here, but that these guys are basically employed by the WWE as basically independent contractors. They
right.
have no insurance.
They have no insurance. They have no health care coverage. The WWE has been out front publicly showing how magnanimous they are, taking several guys. Basically, everybody that wants to avail themselves of drug rehab, WWE will pay for, and not only will they pay for it, but they'll publicly make a show of paying for it because they want to show how big-hearted they are and what great employers they are. But in honesty, you know, in all honesty, WWE is the reason they're on drugs to begin with a lot of times because of the schedule that they put these guys through, 200 wrestling matches a year, some of them 300 matches a year. There's no way the NFL would do something like that. Is they want to go to 20 games, and there's an outcry about that, about look at what these guys are doing to themselves for 16 games, and now you want to make it, you know, 18 or 20 or whatever next plateau they want to take it up to. Well, imagine being a pro wrestler and putting yourself through the equivalent of probably a whole football game when you talk about all the inaction in between that 60 minutes. There's a lot of standing around in between those car wrecks. And then a wrestling match has probably got about as much hitting and contact as a football game. And they're doing it 200-some-odd times a year if they're a top star, maybe even 300. It's almost inhumane. And WWE should be giving them drug rehab because they're the reason most of them are on drugs or over imbibing in alcohol, because they're trying to find something to take the pain away from what they do to their bodies. But yeah, in all honesty, they should be giving them some sort of health care or insurance or something like that. And being independent contractors is such bullshit because it's not like they can walk away. You know, they can do what CM Punk did and walk away, but he's losing all this money that he's not making. He's at risk of being fired. He's at risk of being sued for breach of contract. WWE hasn't done any of that yet because I think they still think there's a chance that he's going to come back, and they want to, you know, stay on his good side, keep him in their good graces, and also probably because he knows where a lot of bodies are buried. He probably has a lot of secrets, and they don't want him to go running and telling those stories, at least not until he's far away from the spotlight. But yeah, the whole independent contractor thing is such BS. It always has been. There's been rumors of wrestlers starting unions for years, but no one's ever turned it around and actually got it organized. I just read a book on my bus trip from Chicago to Memphis and Memphis to Chicago. I read two wrestling books, both very well written, one of which talked about anecdotal stories of Hulk Hogan going to Vince McMahon in the 80s when Jesse Ventura was trying to organize a wrestling union in the 80s. It was Hogan that went to Vince McMahon and had that broken up and basically narked him out. He snitched on Jesse Ventura and the rest of the guys that were going to form a union to try to get fairer working arrangements. Hogan being the big dog, the big star, if you have a union, you have guys that want things more fair and more equal. Well, the guys that are on top don't want things more fair and more equal because they're making all the money. So, you know, they're very happy where wrestling is at that point in time because they're the ones on top. So Hogan being on top went and snitched it out and had that broken up quickly. So I don't know. Maybe they could take a cue from the college football players in Northwestern and finally get the balls to make a union, you know, because it's not easy. I understand that, but something's got to be done. The way wrestling is nowadays, you know, I think something really has to be done in order to stop these early deaths from happening. You know, it's slowed down lately, but it's still crazy, the schedule that these guys are on. They should all be getting breaks like CM Punk is taking right now. They should all get a month or 2 months every year where they don't do anything and just let their body heal up. Because the schedule that they run through right now is just ridiculous.
Yeah, and you could have that written into a contract. But, you know, these guys want to make the money. That's what it's all about. Make the money.
Yep. Wow, that wound up being a half hour on wrestling. Who would have thought that? We didn't talk at all about our trip to Chicago yet, which was a very fun trip, the baseball draft that we had. While we're on the live show, I'll get the plugs out of the way since I always forget them. You can email the show with any questions, comments, any kind of feedback. Let us know how you like the show, how you like the off-season format, if you want us to talk more football, which I can't imagine talking football right now since there's nothing going on football-wise. But some people like ESPN seem to manage to talk about football even when there's no football happening. By the way, the draft is in a month. Get ready. 1 month of draft overload. If you still watch ESPN like I do sometimes, it's coming. Get ready. It's going to make you want to throw up. Jason, you don't even watch ESPN anymore. I really envy you because it's
going
to be sickening sometimes.
Completely done with it.
I don't blame you at all. You can email the show with any feedback. You would go to inmuchlessdetail@gmail.com is where you would send those emails. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. We have a 15-minute little after show at the end of the live show that you can hear only on iTunes. If you subscribe to the show, just search for In Much Less Detail, the podcast. Or when the show gets archived on our show page being where you're listening live right now, blogtalkradio.com/InMuchLessDetail. That'll be up on the archive probably the next day after we do a show is when it gets put up on the archive. And you can tweet us as well. I'm at IMLDTre. Jason's at IMLDJTG. This broadcast is copyrighted. We will talk about our Chicago trip, the draft. We'll get in as much of that as we can on the other side. We'll see you after the music. right, that takes us into our after show portion of our program. 15 minutes to talk about something other than wrestling. I can't believe we had a 30-minute show basically about pro wrestling. That's incredible. It was fun with you, me, and Jerry because there's two people that know wrestling in there. And then, but you and me on wrestling for a half hour, I did not expect to go there.
Well, and not only that, it was sort of a role reversal because if there was no way we could have done a half hour on wrestling if you had seen WrestleMania and I had not, because you would have been doing a half hour show probably by yourself. Because all I could do was just react. I mean, you could be like, "Hey, this happened," and I could just go, "Wow, okay." But it was a little different, being that, you know, you're the big fan, but I'm the one who had to sit through it, and I'm the one who had to report on it. And I hope I at least represented my non-wrestling fandom well.
I think you did it perfectly. Again, you had a great point in there as well that I forgot because I didn't jot it down or anything like that. But, yeah, you broke it down as well as any non-wrestling fan could break it down. So you should be very proud of yourself.
Thank you. Well, you know, we get to talk about wrestling a little more. We can now move into our restaurant critic mode here. You had mentioned that we go to a wrestling-themed restaurant on the north side of Chicago, actually in my old neighborhood where I grew up, not that far from where I grew up, Ashland and Fullerton. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that experience?
It's called the Squared Circle. It is run by former WWE diva and TNA knockout. She was Victoria in WWE. She was Tara in TNA. Her real name is Lisa Marie Veron. She's in her 40s now. She still looks awesome. Definitely my type, tall and in great shape and former gymnast and all that, black haired beauty. Her husband is the head chef, and this is what she has a lot of interest outside of wrestling. Before this, I believe she ran a car, like detailing, you know, trick out your ride type of business. And she might still be doing that, but, she opened this restaurant, the Squared Circle, not very long ago, last year sometime. I've heard about it on a couple of wrestling podcasts I listen to. So the way she was talking it up, I thought it was going to be this huge, you know, monstrosity of a factory that's just going to have lights and memorabilia and pictures and title belts and everything all around. And it's a really tiny place. She actually said on one podcast, she actually said the word verbatim, I quote, "If you go to Fullerton and Ashland, you can't miss it." Well, we went to Fullerton and Ashland. We almost missed it. It is not very big at all. It's a tiny little brick building. It's not tall. Is it a story? Was there even a second level to that place? I think it was
just one story. No, it was a one-story building, just a storefront with very small, very nondescript, even the signage and the lighting. I knew the address. I mean, I knew where it was. You could have easily missed this place if you didn't know it was there and you didn't know where you were going. In the middle of, you know, an urban center like Chicago, people probably drive by that place every day who live there and don't even know the place is there. They had all the wrestling. It was all wrestling all the time in there. They had all these TVs in there, and they were just planted on WWE Network. They didn't even bother. They didn't even have the baseball games on or nothing. It was just wrestling the whole time we were there. All that being said, because I could have really cared less about the wrestling aspect of it, the food was awesome. So I would recommend the place just on the food.
Even that, when you say all the TVs around wrestling, you make it, you know, it sounds like it's a huge place with all the TVs. There's like three TVs in there. That's all. Now, they were all on WWE Network, but
they were well-placed. I'll give them that. Because, this was not a large place. It was a Friday night. Wasn't overly crowded. I mean, we didn't have to wait, but the seats were full. So it wasn't that they, I don't think they were doing a bad business, but even when we left in the heart of what would be a normal dinner rush, there were still seats open. So I would say the place is doing a nice business. The quality of the food alone, the specialty burgers, the shake, best shake I've ever had in my life. I'm still convinced in that. I've had a lot of shakes.
Wow.
Best, that was awesome. It was incredible. I would go back there just for that shake. It was so good. A salted caramel shake, which is not a normal flavor you would think of for a milkshake, but it was absolutely phenomenal. Everyone liked the food. I'd highly recommend it, even if you don't like wrestling.
My burger was sort of boring. It was bacon infused with blue cheese injected inside the burger patty. It was very good. It was very blue cheesy. It was you definitely got all the blue cheese flavor you could possibly hope for. Jason, tell them what you had.
Yeah, I had the Fat Elvis Burger. Could have been the Dead Elvis Burger. It was a cheeseburger on a pretzel roll. I love pretzel buns. It's like this thing now. Love the pretzel buns. With peanut butter, bananas, and peanut butter-infused ricotta cheese. And I told my wife what I had, and she said it sounded infinitely disgusting, that she'd never eat that. And she loves peanut butter, and she loves bananas. She said, oh, I could never eat that. You're making me sick. Just thinking about it. And I was just like, I loved it. It wasn't overpowering. The burger was juicy. And then I have a shake with it. And, of course, I get as my side a salad, because you've got to offset all the bad stuff with something healthy versus duck fat fries.
Which is what I had, which are pretty damn good. Yeah, I would have never tagged you as the guy to try the peanut butter banana ricotta cheese burger, but not only did you try it, you finished it. You killed the motherfucker. You must have really liked it.
I did. Well, I mean, anytime I go down to Chicago, you got to understand where I live here in north central Wisconsin. There's not much going on for food. So anytime I can get away to Chicago for 2 or 3 days, I'm just eating it up. I'll pack on a couple of pounds. I'll come home and go back to the food here and lose it pretty quick. And that's where I'm at right now. But, yeah, anytime I go down to Chicago, get the deep dish, get the pizza, get the Italian beef. You know, you got to kind of, like, hit all the bases. But just awesome. It's hard to find bad food down there. People down there don't know how good they really have it. But the whole point of our being down there was for what is coined in the fantasy baseball league that we are in is the greatest day in sports, and it never fails to live up to its expectations. For people who do fantasy sports online exclusively, you don't know what you're missing. There is nothing better than 12, 17 guys, all, you know, teams, but all these guys sitting around a table and doing it live. There is no better experience than locked up in a room for 5 or 6 hours and plotting your way through a fantasy draft and all the little intricacies and the details and the tells and the nuances and the strategizing. It is, I don't play poker, but it's like fantasy sports poker. I love it. And there's nothing better. I highly encourage everybody to at least play. If they're like fantasy sports, do it live. At least one league.
It's live. It's called the Ad Hack Baseball League. It's one of the oldest fantasy leagues in existence. These guys started this shit up back in the early 80s. I think it was their 31st year or something like that of existence. It's American League only, which is an interesting wrinkle. And it's an auction draft. So when Jason talks about poker playing, this isn't just in this round I'll take this guy and then it sneaks back around to you and you'll take this guy. No, you go around the table, every team nominates a player, and the open auction begins. and it goes up to whatever amount people want to pay for a player, commensurate with our $260 per team salary cap. So you can't go, you know, $100 or something like that on one guy. That would just blow your budget to smithereens. You got to fill in a full team. Is it five outfielders?
Yeah, it's pretty standard roto, you know, five outfielders, first third corner, second short middle, two catchers, a DH, and then nine pitchers. It's fairly standard, like right out of the original Rotisserie League book from, I believe it's 1984, that they started playing out of. I mean, this league is so old, they didn't adopt 5x5 rules for scoring until, I think, 3 years ago. They're playing
yep.
by the book. I mean, straight up by the book. 4x4, this is it. Transaction fees, nothing has changed. I mean, a couple little house rules, but, and I mean, this was my, I believe, 14th year. So, I mean, I always think of myself as like the new guy, and then I realize that teams have come and gone even in my tenure.
Right.
So, which is nice because I'm not quite the new guy anymore. I mean, I've won the league twice. I've finished in the money a couple other times. Took us a long time, admittedly, to win or place for any money. Took a long time before it happened, but it's been at least happening with a little more regularity. And, you know, we develop strategies, and it's fun. It really is my other job. I don't devote any time and energy to anything else I do in fantasy football, or I mean, that's for fun, that's free. This is the real deal with the baseball, and you know, and especially being dedicated to the American League, which I knew nothing about when I joined this league, and now I'm like telling you about God. You it's hard to slide something by me now in the American League because I don't know anything about the National League.
Yeah, you're so focused on the AL and all the minor leaguers and all of that. So the strategizing is over, all the shifty little games and keeping secrets on your sleepers and all that stuff. So all of that is over with. The big question now, how do you like your team?
I think we did okay. I mean, we're very heavy on offense. I think we decided going in that was what we were going to be. Really heavy on offense, stick to our pitching strategy. I actually think we're a little lighter than usual on pitching, but us being light on pitching most years is still probably going to be good enough to finish middle of the pack. But we have one of those offensive teams like we had the first time or the second time we won, where everybody on the team could mash the ball. On any given night, you knew any guy in your lineup was capable of knocking one out of the park. And right now, it really feels like that. We overpaid for guys, granted. We overpaid for Robinson Cano, but that's at a very, very thin position at second base. We definitely overpaid for Jose Abreu from the White Sox. Paid a premium for him because, of course, you're bidding against a lot of White Sox fans in the room that you're in Chicago against. So that drove the price up versus if he was playing for the Angels, he probably would have been $10 less. But fun guy to watch. You get to see this being a White Sox fan. Guy can kill it.
Yeah, I was there. I saw the game live Thursday in 35-degree weather, and I got to saw him flick that bat and drive the ball with no effort. So, yeah, he's going to be really fun to watch all year.
It'll be fun. It'll be a lot of fun. I think this is a team with potential, but with two glaring weaknesses being that we have no saves and a minimal amount of speed. We have respectable speed,
yeah,
but not enough to really run away with anything. But home runs, RBIs, I think we're okay on batting average, runs scored, pretty solid.
I'll get to check out some of those prospects at the Redbirds games. I'll be back section 102, row Q. I'll be